Fantastic. So we're about to get started for the final, but it might be the most exciting plenary of the day, about a topic that I'm personally very, very interested in and passionate about, because I believe it has so much opportunity to transform our industry, both from a customer's perspective and for the companies that we work in. We have a very interesting and diverse panel we're privileged to have, and I'll introduce them briefly, but in summary, we have an individual who's started his own startup, an individual who's working with many startups that cover data analytics, amongst other things, and someone who is working for a large incumbent that's partnering with them. So we'll get a very diverse set of perspectives from each of them. So to my immediate right, it's Brenton Charnley, who's an innovation strategy and insurtech specialist, experienced in helping entrepreneurs, teams, and executives make ideas happen. Brenton is the lead and co-founder of InsurTech Australia, Australia's first member organization supporting growth of the Australian InsurTech ecosystem. Most recently, Brenton was the chief commercial officer of the ASX-listed AI InsurTech Flamingo Ventures, and led strategy, sales, finances, and operations across three continents. Brenton is now the principal of Alpha 39 Innovation, a specialist innovation and InsurTech advisory, helping financial services companies to make ideas happen. A lot of the names of those companies are so cool, so you can sort of talk more about what they actually do. To the far right, we have Paul Reynolds. Paul is the CEO and co-founder of Factor Financial Analytics. So it's a fintech focused on the data-driven risk models for the SME segment. With a strong focus on trading risk, Factor has engagements with Euler Hermes, trade credit insurance arm of Allianz Group, Xero, a small business accounting platform, and the World Bank. Prior to founding Factor, Paul worked developing nascent digital financial services across markets in Asia, including Cambodia, Hong Kong, India, Myanmar, and Singapore. And then in the middle, we have Vanessa Dobson, who leads a multidisciplinary team comprising of research and development specialists in the fields of product, claims, and underwriting to deliver the strategic innovations in the pursuit of a holistic approach to risk. The team seeks to identify untapped opportunities in the arena of risk management and formulate methods by which to capitalize on those opportunities. Vanessa joined Munich Re in 2003 and held several roles within the Life division before taking lead of the research and development team in July 2014. Vanessa has specialist expertise in the area of automated underwriting, is a design thinking practitioner, an active member in the InsurTech Australia space. Vanessa's extensive knowledge and experience make her a well-respected member of the Munich Re Life Management team. Well, so thank you all for joining us for the next 45 minutes or so. Brenton, perhaps starting with yourself. Over the last couple of years, we've all heard about tech being added to almost every sector. FinTech was a marriage of finance and financial services organizations. We have advice tech, we have reg tech. This morning someone mentioned regulatory tech, and I'm sure next year we'll have the RoboActuary conference, which all of you will attend. Can you just maybe help us decode what is InsurTech? Why is it happening and why now?
Can everyone hear me if I talk without a microphone? Does that work? Very good. Thank you, Angat. Thank you for the introduction. Brenton Charnley is my name. Pleased to be here talking to actuaries. I must put my hand up and say that I'm not an actuary, so if I say anything that is wrong, please forgive me for that. In terms of InsurTech, clearly the combination of the two words together, insurance and technology, and if you want to spell it correctly, you don't put the E in the middle. I think that's probably the first thing to realize. In terms of my definition that I talk about, it's the solving of known challenges in the insurance industry and discovery of unknown opportunities in order to create value for the customer. And I think this is the exciting time today, is that we're moving away from a world whereby the customer isn't engaged in the technology, but the technology is touching the customer. And I think this discussion of automation today is a really great example of that. Automation has been happening for hundreds of years, back to agriculture, and it's only until now that we're kind of fearful of our jobs being lost. However, we've had these things happening multiple times as far as touching the customer. If I bring that back to InsurTech, it means that we have opportunity to engage the customer, not just that onboarding and claim time, but in that continuous life cycle, that gap that we never actually know who the customer is. And I think this is the opportunity. So some great examples of that being usage-based insurance or on-demand insurance are great examples of changing the fundamental principle of how we're using insurance today. So InsurTech, I think, is positive, and the strategy that we're using at InsurTech Australia is not without the incumbent. So some people may be surprised, but we are the defender of the insurer, because without the insurer, I think it's very unlikely that InsurTech will be successful. Ultimately, technology by itself is the merely enabler of the insurance transaction. Incumbents, the regulation, reinsurance, the years and years of data that the insurance industry has needs to support the use of technology. Technology can't stand by itself. And we see that today, whereby most of the enterprise technology companies that are coming into the market are actually empowering or enabling insurers or reinsurers, as opposed to disrupting the D word that we're all talking about. If you have a look, there's not actually been huge disruptive innovation in InsurTech to date. The reason being is most of them are actually getting working with or empowered by insurers themselves. I think Munich Re is a great example. I'm sure Vanessa will talk about it. Munich Re investing heavily before a lot of the insurers into InsurTech. Capital markets very low, returns very low, means that they need to provide other services above and beyond claims, capital, risk management. So I think that's an exciting time for us now, that InsurTech is not something being done to the insurance industry. It's something that we're all a part of. And one thing I'd like to also highlight is who says that they fell into the insurance industry? Well, I guess we're all actuaries who choose to be part of the industry. But, you know, it's often a term that I hear when I talk to people in insurance. It's like, I didn't choose to be here. You know, unlike myself, I chose to be in this space. And why? Because there's a lot of opportunity. And why now? FinTech has cooled. FinTech has stopped the investment. And if you can see some of the trends, a lot of the venture capital investment has petered off. And of course, what happens? Investment needs to go somewhere else. And so the insurance industry was the next logical thing, because a lot of the VCs were like, well, I know financial services. I have no idea what this insurance thing is. And so a good example, in 2015, there was about 2 to 3 dedicated corporate venture capital funds from the insurance industry. Today there's 15. So in 2 years, not even 2 years, we've gone from 2 to 15 corporate venture capital funds. So that's a little bit of an overview of InsurTech and why now.
Fantastic. Thank you. I think speaking to someone who accidentally fell into insurance, I think Paul's a great example of that. So Paul, could you please tell us a bit about that?
Okay. I've got a few few slides to present to explain sort of Factor and what we do. I've got 2 call-outs. I'm not an actuary or a data scientist. I'm a business person looking for business opportunities, and I'm not from insurance. So I'll probably say lots of wrong things.
That's true.
Okay, is this working?
Okay.
Yeah, it's a fail. It's not working. Okay. So we build digital risk products for small business. So here's a mouthful. Data-driven digital risk products for small business. I'll explain what that means in a minute. So what Factor do is we focus on one of the key risks for small business is their trading risk. So when you have a look at small business, the biggest issue is cash flow. And one of the biggest risks around cash flows are accounts receivable. So not only that risk as a business, but their counterparty risk. And then when you look into that deeper, it's the whole network risk assessment. So where does a business fit within a whole network of businesses that make up the trading relationships between those businesses? Our goal is to help small businesses grow safely. Where we come from is a banking background, is really looking at say invoice financing, factoring, hence the name. As we got into this, we realized that from a banking's perspective, they look at financial services to those small businesses, funding cash flow. But when you shift this across to a small business, they're actually running like a mini bank themselves. They borrow from their suppliers in trade credit, and they lend to their customers in trade credit. So they're managing a lot of risk themselves. And how we fell into it was, we realised that there's a specialised insurance product out there called trade credit insurance. There's a couple of big players in the world, Euler Hermes, which is owned by the Allianz Group, Coface, Atreides, QBE out of Australia, a real focus on that. And it's a real, the type of risk models that banks look at around trade risk is similar to what the insurers do. So we see a real shift in providing risk products for small business around their trading risk. So what's happening in the market is small businesses are shifting online, and there's two key things to pull out of this. Is, in my view, is small business is just, it's going to start exploding because of cloud services. Where before, business largely was the domain of big businesses because they could afford the tech, they could afford the marketing, they could go out and acquire customers. Cloud has allowed small businesses almost a level playing field. They can use cloud services to support their tech. They've got all these other platform as a services to support other elements of their business. And the other big thing is marketplaces. So you'll know of Uber and Airbnb as common ones. But what you're seeing now is, especially on business-to-business trade, is I can go out and acquire customers from around the world with my product through these marketplaces. And a classic example is Alibaba. So you're seeing this shift online. And the other big stat I love here is B2B e-commerce is twice the size of B2C e-commerce. So everyone talks about, the Amazons and what's going to consumers. It's actually business-to-business transactions. The other thing that's facilitating this outside of Alibaba is big corporates are changing their legacy systems to being e-commerce-like. So they've got the ability to go out to lots of small business customers and do these trades. So I talked before about data-driven digital risk products. So what does that mean? So if you have a look here, you've got this shift of small business to digital, it's creating all these digital channels, but it's also creating this data. The ability to shift that across into data-driven risk models, and I'll go into the next few slides around how do you design and build those, but the ability to suck in data from a customer that drives these risk models that then feed into these real-time pricing APIs. So as Brenton alluded to, so on demand into these digital channels, as when customers are doing a transaction, I'm now transacting with someone online and I'm not quite sure who they are, a risk product can come in and take away that risk or transfer that risk out. So how do you convert this new data into risk products? These are some terms I borrowed from a McKinsey podcast, but this is exactly what we were doing as a business. And I'll get into some examples later around how we did this. But there needs to be an integrated R&D team. So there needs to be some data engineers, so people who understand the data that's coming in. You guys know as well as I do that there's good data and there's bad data. So you really need to understand the validity of that data and actually what does that data mean. The second bit is a data scientist. Actuaries, data scientists, personally, I think there's a mix of skills there. It's really about getting insights from a data and then creating some algorithms or some predictive models around that. Then there's a business translator, which is the role I feel, and you'll see this in a few other slides, is the so what. So you can build these risk models, so what? What's the customer problem you're solving and how do you bring that together? Now, it's critical to have these teams working together because it's very rare from a business side you can go to the data science side and say, solve this problem. The data science, typically what happens is they go in and find part of the insights and then they've got to come back to the business guys and say, okay, does this work for you or not? So there's a lot of back and forth. So I want to run through two examples. We've been working with Xero for the last couple of years. If you don't know Xero, they're accounting software platform for small business. They've got 1.2 million customers. They're growing at about 40% year on year. Love this stat. They've got 30% of all small businesses in New Zealand and about 17 to 18% in Australia. They're huge. So they're a great source of small business data. So we created this integrated R&D team. So the faces you see up there are a factor team. So Aaron, on the data engineer, he's actually a small business accountant. He understands the data that's getting put in. Our data scientists, Marty and Ross, and then the business translators, myself, and Aaron again. Myself coming from a banking background and Aaron coming from a small business background. So the challenge was small businesses have struggled to access capital. Their trading and cash flow risks are quite high for small business. So the opportunity was, how do you take this data to build new risk models? The outcome what we achieved with Xero was to create a better structured database for their lending APIs. So they've created APIs for banks and lending partners to provide better credit outcomes for the customers. The second one, this is how we actually got started in this. I was working for the World Bank. We had a challenge in Indonesia. The Procter & Gamble and Unilevers, this is an interesting example, 70% of their sales go through little mum and dad shops. So if you've been to Bali or anywhere in Asia, the little mum and dad shops on the side of the road, there's about 2 million in Indonesia. Procter & Gamble sell directly to 1 million. So you imagine that. Every 1 to 2 weeks, they're delivering goods to these small shops. What the challenge was they wanted to increase the sales. The secondary challenge for the small business, they've only got cash flow for 3 or 4 days. So imagine that. So Procter & Gamble invest all this infrastructure to get a delivery driver, sales guy to come and sell them product, but the shop's only got enough cash to buy 3 days worth of stock. So there's a real loss of opportunity. The other opportunity was over the last 5 years, they've digitized their distribution chain. So they've started collecting a lot of data on these small businesses. These small businesses are paper-based. They're cash-based, they don't have bank accounts, they don't pay tax unless they have to. And if you've been to Asia, tax is a negotiation with your local tax agent. So it's all like, you know, what do I pay you, what do I pay the tax office? So there's actually no physical data, there's no credit bureau on these guys. So what we did is we developed new risk models. And we went out and ran an experiment where these retailers who were previously cash on delivery, we gave them 14 days credit. We managed to increase sales by 30% for Procter & Gamble. They were, and the way we integrated that in is they actually paid for the cost of the credit to support those sales. So some of the challenges we've faced in developing digital risk products is getting that integrated R&D team together. As you can imagine, there's a diverse group of people. What you're seeing now is insurers and banks creating these corporate labs where these teams can come together. There's third-party expertise. You know, we put our hands up as one of those parties. Accessing customer data for R&D. This can be challenging for new data. So there's anonymized data, cloud data. So the data we worked with was anonymized. We managed to get the relationships with those data owners. But you're seeing aggregated data aggregators out there, like Data Republic, who are creating anonymized data sources where you can go in and explore. The next challenge is ongoing access to data. To get a customer to share their data with you is possible because there's APIs. The challenge is why do they want to share that data with you? And all the research out there is you've got to have a really strong value proposition. And it's not, we'll give you a different risk product. It's really got to hit a pain point of theirs. As a colleague of mine used to call it, it's got to be 10 times value for a customer to change their behaviour. And then probably a question you guys have is you build these new risk models. How do you validate and monitor? The core to this is time series data. So what you're seeing a lot now with cloud data is that it's captured over time. So you've got the ability to go back in time and have a look at, say, 2013 data and build the models on that and then look at how that performs on 2014 and 2015. And the ability to look at your existing internal risk models and performance and taking that back and comparing how your historic performance went against these models' performance over that period of time. Okay, thank you.
So, well, I love the fact that you have integrated R&D team there because that's exactly what Vanessa has set up at Munich. So I think we've heard from a startup, we've heard from someone who works with a lot of startups, and it'd be good to hear from someone who's working for a large player, like most of us, and get their thoughts around how they are playing into the insurtech space. Vanessa.
Right, so in terms of, perhaps if I just stand up here for a moment. In terms of insurtech and whether or not we see it as an opportunity or a threat in our market, absolutely an incredible opportunity for all of the players that are represented in this room, I would imagine. For anyone who's perhaps thinking it's more of a threat, I would encourage you to take a half glass full approach and look into this as the opportunity that it really, really is. We have opportunities here to revitalise the insurance industry through the use of tech. And that is essentially what InsurTech is all about. So if I look at the insurance industry, particularly the life one, we're not quite comatose, but gosh, we could do with a shot of adrenaline. And I think that's where InsurTech adds that to our marketplace. In terms of how Munich Re are responding to this, so if I'll take a global view for a moment and then bring it in locally. So globally, we've immersed ourselves in this space. So a couple of years ago, when our board recognised the fact that as a large incumbent, and we all face the incumbent's challenge of looking at our market and thinking, how do we create something new here? How do we do sell products and services that don't just cannibalise what we already do, but perhaps create new opportunities? So what they decided to do was set up a new entity, and that is called Munich Re Digital Partners. So that is quite a concrete and unique step for a large reinsurer to take. And it was very deliberately a distinct entity. So Digital Partners was established. There was all of two people a couple of years ago, but one of our very senior managers took that on. They've grown to about a dozen, but what Digital Partners have done in a relatively short period of time has been quite impressive. So they've established a technology platform which essentially works with anyone who's entering the digital insurance market. And it takes away all of the kind of boring stuff behind the scenes. People who need to bring risk expertise to the table, capital, all of those regulatory hurdles that need to be jumped through in order to establish a digital insurer. So all of that is taken care of by Munich Re Digital Partners, and the tech platform that they've built interacts with the startup's tech platform. So the startup can be out there engaging with customers and doing what they do very, very well, and behind the scenes they've got this massive partner who's making that happen. So within a couple of years, Digital Partners has established relationships with about 20 different startups around the globe. Startups such as Slice and Next Insurance are just a couple. And whilst they're playing mainly in the general insurance space at this stage and in the Northern Hemisphere, we are of course bringing them locally, aren't we, Brenton? That's our aim. But as I said, it's a space to watch. It's early days, but they've really seemed to have made themselves quite attractive to the digital insurers that are out there now. In addition to that, we have InnoScouts based in Tel Aviv and Berlin and Beijing and Silicon Valley, all the hot spots. But the main purpose there is to go through quite a methodical process of identifying startups that we see great value or potential in, and establishing working relationships with those startups. So that's underway as well. And that does also involve some investment, obviously, in those businesses. And locally, we've immersed ourselves in the InsurTech conversation here, and mainly a big thanks to Brenton, who set up the InsurTech Sydney community just over 12 months ago, maybe a little bit 18 months ago. InsurTech Australia will be launched in a couple of weeks. Munich Re will be a founding partner of that organisation. And it's been great to be a part of that, the various meetup groups that we've had. And we've recognised that we need to be part of the conversation. I would encourage all of you to do so as well, because you need to know what is going on, what is it, what are the flavours that these startups are bringing. And certainly the innovative mindset that they bring and the pace at which they run. And we'll probably cover that off in one of our other questions in a little while. So I'll leave it there now.
Let me kick things off. I was having a conversation with an individual who shall remain unnamed, but a very passionate actuary, and the starting point was, well, actuaries invented data analytics, so surely we've got a role to play. And I think that's clear, and we've heard through many of the sessions that there is a role to play, but I think what we're seeing through the short conversations you've just heard, that there's individuals from outside the industry that are starting to use data analytics as a core enabler, but really change fundamentals of the industry. And it's not just focusing on better pricing or better reserving or better valuations, activities that actuaries do as bread and butter. It's actually leading to new propositions. And I know, Brenton, maybe starting with yourself, you mentioned a couple of examples beforehand around usage-based insurance, which have been around in GI for a few years. I mean, are there any other examples that you're seeing where it's not just using analytics for pricing or core activities, but really fundamentally new products or new ways of engaging customers that are coming up?
Yeah, good question. For those who didn't know, last week we had InsurTech Connect 2017 in Las Vegas last week, which we just came back, and Oliver Wyman were a big partner. And one of the key trends, kind of linking these two together, was number one, we didn't talk about lemonade. That was quite interesting. That's the topic of conversation on most panels, so let's try not to talk about that. Number two, product was actually quite on top as one of the key commentary. And interesting, when I think about product, it's pretty hard to talk about new product without price. And if you have a look at some of the new insurtechs coming to market, has anyone seen some of their claims loss ratios, what they might sit at? Does anyone have a guess of perhaps where Lemonade's claims loss ratio is? 400. Higher. Yeah. 1,500%. Now, I think that poses an interesting question, kind of connecting these two together, right? Data analytics or data scientists, to me, have been brought on board predominantly because we have huge amounts of data that in startups we need to help to acquire a customer, identify opportunities to convert a customer, typically online. If you overlay that into the insurance world, you've got the same problem. You're trying to acquire a customer, but you have price and product coming to the mix at the same time. So my question in this scenario is between the difference between data analytics and data scientists and actuaries. So you probably need both in that scenario. So you've got a function of price and customer acquisition that has to happen at the same point in time. And it's interesting that it's kind of how long will these kind of insurtechs have a runway whereby they can sustain huge claims losses. So the question is the price wrong, i.e. the actuary hasn't got the price right? Is that a question we should ask? Or have they got the price right, but there's a discount provided by marketing benefit, and therefore there's other losses that are coming in? So I think we're in this interesting point where InsurTech, data science, and actuarial analysis need to come together to result in these new ventures that are forming. I asked an interesting question this week, which was, who are the original data scientists? And I think this is what we came to. The question is, are actuaries? I mean, mathematicians, you're all mathematicians. But ultimately, data scientists have had a rebranding, if one would think. Someone took a marketing spin to this and said, why are we calling ourselves mathematicians or statisticians anymore, right? That's just not sexy enough anymore. Data scientists, let's do that. So I would challenge the Actuary Institute and say, what is that same rebranding that we can do to this world to make InsurTech, let's call it, a little bit sexier? So maybe we can have a discussion about the rebranding of an actuarial name. Maybe that's something hard to talk about. But I was thinking something like insurance futurist.
We've got Jenny, who's the president of the Institute. I'm sure she'll have a view on that as she closes the session. That's right. Room for improvement, I think, is the message. I mean, it'd be an open question. Brenton's stat, which is a public stat, is Lemonade had a loss ratio of 1,500%. There's other startups that I know of which are between 500 to 700%. I mean, is there an actuary in the room who will sign off on a product when they do their analysis with that loss ratio? And I think, by and large, the answer would be, as expected, be very few. I think that itself is sort of telling of a difference in how some of these startups, one, are thinking about propositions, and secondly and importantly, are allowed to think, because a lot of us work in a regulated or heavily regulated industry, and sometimes we just don't have the permission to play. But importantly, I think there's a consideration around sort of changing the mindset that actually we believe in this because it's the true customer need, and the 1,500 won't sustain beyond a few months, and it will improve.
But, I mean, to that point, like if I draw a comparison, Uber today, their unit economics is still not profitable. So I think there's something like $1 billion every month they're burning globally. So what's the difference between that and having an unprofitable product today in order to grow a business that's sustainable? And I agree, like when you overlay the insurance industry to that, regulation, yes, and actuarial analysis, yes. But you still have a business that's being backed by capital. So I think this comes the second question, which is where's the capital going to come from for these venture capital? Is it going to come from the insurers? Is it going to come from the reinsurers?
Well, Munich Re actually supports Lemonade, so we, I'm hoping we're getting that right.
That wasn't rehearsed at all. So,
and just to jump in here, from a lending perspective, and especially new lenders, they will actually take a position to get bad loans with the view of understanding the bad characteristics versus the good characteristics. And I think potentially that's, and again, I'm not close to insurance, but what a Lemonade position could be is going out and just buying data and understanding what are the good characteristics and bad characteristics so they can better price in the future. And as long as it's contained, you know, the size of your portfolio you're prepared to take those losses on, it's a strategy.
No, completely agree, Paul. So how, you know, actuaries, you know, through our training, through our ways of working and through fear of the regulator, we're, you know, all very focused around accuracy to a fairly high degree, because in some cases it's required by law, in other cases that's just how we work. You know, you're in what you've done with the examples that you shared, you were working in markets with poor data for customers who are not sort of sharing that much data. I mean, can you share any insights around how did you overcome some of the massive data challenges to come up with an offering which is, you know, fairly viable and attractive?
Yeah. First of all, getting access to data is not easy. That takes time for both PNG and Xero. So we really needed to go and sell the long-term vision of how they're going to support their business. Secondly, the data structure is typically all over the place. Unless the database has been set up to run models like this, it's all over the place. So we spend a lot of our time cleaning the data. I'd say 70% of our focus is actually cleaning the data, getting that into a structure that we can analyse on. And even taking a step back is really understanding what that data is. So when you have a look at the Xero, that's customer entered data. So a small business entering their data. Now you do have some proof points. So they get bank statement data that feed in, which is a source of truth. You then also have counterparty, so you can recognise two data points on the same transaction. But it's really spending a lot of time understanding what the data is and what data you can rely upon. And then it's getting in and sort of looking at the models and seeing what you can predict.
Thank you. And then, Vanessa, from your perspective, from an incumbent's perspective, what are the opportunities you're seeing from data analytics? You mentioned a lot sort of doing partnerships with a range of providers. Are you sort of doing that with the intent of, yes, learning from them, because clearly there can be opportunities to learn a lot from these startups, or sort of focusing around, we want to improve pricing, want to do something on distribution or other parts of the value chain? I think anything you can share that is not commercially sensitive would be valuable.
Absolutely. I think it's all of the above. Certainly the ability to learn from these startups and the different types of business models they are willing to explore, with which many of us incumbents don't have that freedom to do. The type of data that can be collected, so new data points that may not fit into the traditional data sets that we have access to, that will be fascinating. Again, it will take time to build up, and the quality coming in can vary from market to market and product to product. So data is, like most large organisations or any organisation, is an absolute focus point for Munich Re, and we've invested really, really heavily in this space and in the data analytics space alone. In terms of utilising the data, so if I think your question was around the opportunities within it, I think you may have touched on it there, Paul, in terms of why do we analyse data? What is it that we're trying to uncover through all of the analytics that we do? And if I simplified it hugely, surely it's about unearthing insights. So we want to find insights that really matter, right? Insights that will determine what types of products we design and sell, how our customers interact with us or the products that we design and sell. How we price those products, all of those things. So the gold that we're chasing, the nuggets that we're trying to find, are the insights themselves. That's why we're doing it. And how we might go about doing that might vary depending on all the skills that are in this room and elsewhere in terms of the types of models and tech that we could use.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think in terms of the opportunities, you know, often we think in silos around actually let's just focus on new products or let's just do pricing, but there's a lot you can do across the value chain. And even in one of the sessions we had earlier, there was a lot of focus around underwriting. And similarly, you can take that across the other parts of the value chain.
If I add to that just briefly, in terms of the product that we sell, if I think of life products, if digital is the new normal and that's how we're going to be in the future, I would imagine we wouldn't be my first port of call to digitalise what we currently do. As in just take the existing products and digitalise them or the existing forms or processes. In a truly digital world, how would that impact the types of products that we would sell? So if customers, I think I'm one of them, I am one of them, if I'm looking for a product that is truly flexible, that I could perhaps buy components of at different stages of my life, that I could flex up and down at different points, digital could allow that. I would imagine there might be some pricing actuaries here thinking, how on earth would we cater to that or price for that? I can't answer that question, but surely the enablement provided by the digitalisation could make a digital product look very different from what we currently sell.
Absolutely. And I think some of the examples we're seeing, particularly around the gig economy, so players like Slice and others, they are offering usage-based, even life insurance, that sort of at the earlier stages of maturity, but I think the industry is certainly heading in that direction. Brenton, I mean, any thoughts from yourself around the local landscape? We've had clearly it's early stages of maturity for the local insurtech scene. Obviously, a lot of focus on it now with yourselves and others that are driving it. What are some of the challenges that you think that the local startups that you deal with, they're facing when they sort of start to work in our industry? And any perspectives around lessons learned from their experiences?
Good questions. It's always good starting with challenges when we talk about insurance sometimes. I think the going overseas a lot, and for those who travel as well, I think even consumer-based, if I use an example in fintech, has anyone heard of an app in America called Venmo? Now, Venmo is an app that enables you to transfer money between two people in America. And it's very popular. Why is that? Because the banks don't do it very well. But you come back to Australia and you go, well, we've been doing that. Our banking apps can do that, and we've been doing that for many years. Now, surprisingly, we cut ourselves down a little bit in Australia that we're not advanced in financial services, but in fact we are. And I think we can use that to our advantage here in Australia to really, really push that forward. We actually are heavily digitally enabled. And the opportunity, I think, for insurance is really to move quickly, what I would call not just to digitalise, and I think Vanessa's reference, let's not just digitise what we have, let's actually go to what the innovation 3.0 might look like. So that is certainly a challenge, but again, the opportunity there. InsurTech is new, early stage startups focusing on it. Number one, regulation. Number two, education and awareness. People don't understand the insurance industry. So what we're trying to do in InsurTech Australia is work with all the major carriers in which to advise fintech startups. And I think Paul's a great example. You weren't in insurance, you're in fintech, and you found an opportunity in insurance. So I think that's a great example. We see a number of fintechs actually moving into the InsurTech space. I think a lot of robo-advisors platforms will notice that it's a pure volume game, trying to sell shares, a huge volume transaction. I think Macquarie just closed down their robo-advice platform recently as well. So a great example as to opportunity for InsurTech coming in. I think for you guys in incumbent land, if I call that, inside the insurers, get out of the building and come and join the meetup groups. And I've seen a number of faces here today that have come along to our InsurTech meetups. Come and support them, understand, get to know some of the startups, because actually all of them have no idea about actuarial analysis and they do actually need support. So actually give some context, and I'd love to see more actuaries around the table when we're talking about product. When I talk about product, it's a digital product, and I think there'd be some great opportunity for actually to have people working with people, whether you're inside and incumbent or not, actually getting outside. So we're trying to create these opportunities to overcome some of these education and awareness challenges for the Australian marketplace.
I think, Brenton, with that comment, I'm sure Jenny's just given you a complimentary membership into the Institute for a year. I think final sort of question from my end. There's a number of actuaries, you know, who are venturing into non-traditional fields. I think, you know, Paul and Vanessa, you both sit on different sides of the desk. You know, any advice you would give to individuals who have sort of been through or spent most of the time in the traditional field and want to get into this space? Any words of wisdom around what they should do, lessons learnt through the coalface?
I'll jump in. I think there's a part you've just got to dive in and do it. I think as Brenton mentioned, there's a lot of interest in InsurTech, and I'm seeing that come out of the fintech space as people who are involved in innovation see a big opportunity in insurance, especially around sort of that broker model. And the ability that digital will allow you to jump across. I'd see a lot of InsurTechs who would want some part-time staff. As a startup myself, capital is such a big issue. I'd love to have a staff of 50 data scientists and go out and solve lots of problems, but I don't have the budget to do that or the capital. I think there's the opportunity to become advisors to InsurTechs as a way to step in. You can keep your day job, keep the money coming in. That might evolve into part-time or full-time roles as they raise capital and get experts in.
Yeah, so I'd add to that, to anyone in the room who has an interest in how might we reshape the current value chain in insurance, then get involved with the InsurTechs. It still comes back to, yes, it might be a part-time job to begin with, but the desire and the drive to get something out there to consumers, which arguably is better or enhanced to what we offer in the traditional space, is there. A couple of things I took away from the InsurTech conference that was held, ANZIF ran one back in March, so here in Sydney, and it was sold out within, you know, a really short time, and it was filled with a number of people from across the insurance industry, representing both startups, mainly startups and incumbents. The drive and grit that was in the room was quite impressive and palpable. So beyond the hype, the average age, I think this may have changed recently, of founders of startups in this space is about 42. So we're not talking about a bunch of 20-year-olds who have come up with a great idea and now are trying to conceptualise that. These are people who are experienced in the traditional sense, qualified, experienced, they've done the hard yards, and then they've seen a way to do things better and through a different model. So if that's the kind of people who are involved in this space, then they would also be looking for others who may have additional experience to add to that. So I wouldn't feel, if anyone was feeling that it's only for a certain demographic or people with a completely radically different mindset, please don't feel held back by that. Again, I would encourage you to get involved, and the InsurTech Australia meetup is probably the simplest way to do that. And of course, there's fun people like Brenton and I there.
Fantastic. I could keep going, but I wanted to give the audience the chance to ask any questions of three of the members. So over to you for the next 10 minutes or so.
Andrew Scott from Connecting the Dots. Did you talk to venture capitalists who look to seed capital into your businesses together with the reinsurers?
Was that do we talk to them?
Yes.
Yes. Do you want me to expand on that one?
What's the time? So you talk about a viable business model. So what's the sort of time horizon are we talking about?
Well, most venture capitalists, and this is we interesting, like, I guess the perspective from InsurTech Connect. There was all the major venture capital firms at InsurTech Connect this year. Now, if that doesn't show what's interesting, I'm not sure. We had one of the VCs come and speak to us, and this is the growth rate they're expecting. 20% month-on-month customer growth. 20%. I'm not sure if there's many businesses that can do 20% month-to-month growth, but they're expecting to have billion-dollar exits from companies. So they're playing over a seven-year horizon for their investment cycle. On average, they see about 1,000 to 1,500 companies a year, and they'll invest in 10. So, you know, this is the kind of scale that they're looking at, because they're big dollars deals. But this is why we're seeing these early stage, I guess, price issues, maybe if we call it that, loss ratios maybe, because customer acquisition cost is so high at this early stage for these companies.
I think I'd just add that the interest from VCs and broadly just investors, historically there's been a bit of a reluctance within the insurance industry, because it's viewed, one, to be very heavily regulated, and two, to be very capital intensive, certainly in a lot of markets. And that's still the case. So what you're seeing is, firstly, the investments going into parts of the value chain that don't require the same degrees of capital. So anything related to customer acquisition or distribution, particularly in brokerages, there's a lot of PE money flowing in there. And organizations are still relying on larger players and primarily reinsurers to sort of provide the capital, because they just have scale and are able to better do it. And most PE or funds or investors don't have the appetite to provide that. Anything else? Okay, I know we're 5 minutes from beers, so won't hold you guys up. Listen, thank you, everyone, for your participation, and please welcome me in thanking the panelists for their contributions today. So I've been told by Elaine that the wines are not cheap, so please ignore the comment from Johan. These are good quality wines. Jenny, it's over to you.
Thank you. So I gather I'm keeping you from beer, but I just wanted to, I'm really here just to close the conference and to thank everybody for their participation. So I haven't been able to be here all day, but that was an interesting session for me. And I guess what I took out of it was, we have to think a lot about collaboration with other people, so that actuaries on their own are not just data scientists and can't bring everything to the table. We have to work with lots of different people and lots of different roles. And so that's, you know, different skills, but also different geographies. I mean, obviously this is a field where thinking global is really important, and thinking about understanding what's happening overseas as well as in our markets. So I thank you for the encouragement to come along to the meetup sessions, because I think that really is something that will enable people to really get a handle on the different sort of language that they need to use. I always think when you're looking at moving into a field where perhaps you don't have the same depth of expertise, actually understanding the language that people talk and feeling comfortable with it gives you a much greater ability to move forward in that area. So somebody said, how do you move into this space? Dive in. And you know, sometimes that's just what you have to do. So when people ask me, how do they get a job in an area where they don't necessarily have lots of experience, my first response is, you've got to apply for a job. So if you don't actually get out there and apply for some jobs, you're not going to end up working in that field. Maybe you won't get the first few jobs you apply for, but you will have learned something through that process, because it will make you think about, not just I'm an actuary, but actually what sort of skills have I got that I can bring to the table? And by applying for positions, you'll learn what's important and what's not important. So good luck on that. So thank you to all the plenary speakers for their contribution. We really appreciate the time that you've given to us. Thank you to the organising committee, Angat in particular for his as convener, but also Michael Strozhev, Daniel Stone, Bill Constantinides, Elaine Grace and Sarah Gibson, and then of course all the event staff at the Institute. I think you've all been getting text messages about feedback, so please give us the feedback so we know what to improve for next year. And we look forward to seeing you at future events. And please stay and have a drink and catch up with people.